bitch please.
Oh, bitch please my ass. Do you want a sandwich?
Dig that. Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man, a gentleman. I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your way.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the JB Low Tech Podcast. Again, I'm here in my man cave in the Green Circle Studios. And I hope that you've been enjoying the other episodes. And if you are, tell a friend. And also look me up on Facebook and Twitter. Today's guest is a rising star in his profession, and I'm also happy to have him on. Here next on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
When you need someone to listen. A lawyer you know and trust.
Congratulations to all the Minnesota businesses that scraped through the last year. It sure hasn't been easy, but we've done it together. And while we certainly need to move forward, it's good to reflect on what we've been through and the many losses. Here at Bradshaw & Bryant, we held a lot of Zoom meetings, increased our phone calls, and have done our best to keep up with all the changes while continuing to provide quality work. We'd like to thank everyone that turned to us with their personal injury and criminal needs, as well as the courtrooms for bringing the community back together to serve justice. We look forward to being part of Minnesota's growth and success for many years to come. I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. I hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, don't sign anything till you've talked to us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Seeking justice for the injured, Bradshaw & Bryant.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the JB's Low Tech Podcast. As I stated earlier in my opening, today's guest is a rising star and somebody I'm very proud of. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce the new head basketball coach at the University of Minnesota, Ben Johnson. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, man. I appreciate the invite and get a chance to speak with you on your podcast, man.
Yeah, I know you're very busy. You're trying to get things set up and bring in new ball players and lay down the expectations and how you expect things to go. So I really appreciate you giving a little bit of your time.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. There's a lot going on when you take over a job, but, you know, obviously me and you go way back, man, and have a really good relationship. So, you know, anything I can do to help you in the jump on, I enjoy the conversation, man.
Okay. So I like to have my guests kind of give a little bit of their origin story. And I believe did you grow up in Minneapolis?
I did. I grew up in South Minneapolis.
Okay. And then you went on to play high school ball where at?
Yeah, played at De La Salle High School right there on Nicollet Island.
Yeah, it is for my – I have a lot of out-of-town guests who listen to this, and for who don't know, I believe it's a private Catholic school. Correct?
Yeah, it's a private Catholic school, and it's right downtown on the Hennepin Bridge, and you know, there's a couple, it's a LaSallian ministry, so there's a couple of them across the country. I know there's one in Louisiana, there's a De La Salle in California, Chicago, so they're kind of spread out throughout the country, but it's a co-ed private high school, 5 minutes from the U of M campus. You know, some place that I hold near and dear to my heart that really helped me, you know, academically and athletically.
Yeah. I didn't grow up here, but my brother was a principal of a high school called Cardinal Ritter High in St. Louis, yep. And it's pretty similar to De La Salle. De La Salle is a power in basketball in the state.
Yeah.
And Ben was one of their greats. And so to have a local great move on to become the head basketball coach is something wonderful. But as a player, I can't remember, who did you play under?
So at Minnesota, I played under Dan Munson.
Okay.
I don't think he gets enough credit. So he actually was the guy that originated the whole Gonzaga boom.
And, correct.
So Mark Few worked under him, and when Coach ended up taking this job, obviously Few took over Gonzaga, but had a great run here with Coach and still stay in contact with him to this day. He's doing really good out in Long Beach, coaching Long Beach State. Like I said, he's one of the best just overall team coaches that I've been around. Just knows how to kind of be that CEO and get all these bodies and minds to be on the same page.
And you had a wonderful 4 years at the University of Minnesota, I take it?
Yeah, my time here was great. I mean, to be able to play in front of my, family, friends, to be able to represent, Minnesota and the Gopher basketball was awesome. Wish we had a little bit more success on the court as far as like NCAA tournaments, but we won and got a chance again to compete at a high level, and the friendships and relationships that I made here wouldn't trade it for the world. So I had a great experience.
Well, let me back up a second. Why did you, or when did you fall in love with the game of basketball?
For me, I was that kid growing up that whatever sport was in season, I kind of played. So that was, soccer, baseball, track, football. I did hockey for a year.
Okay.
Obviously basketball. I wanted to try it all. And whenever was going on or whatever I saw on TV, I wanted to run out there and play. And I wouldn't say I always watched basketball growing up, as a kid, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. All those greats. I probably really started to love it in junior high. I started to play more competitive, about sixth, seventh, eighth grade with the traveling system, and mm-hmm. started to dip my toe in AAU, started to, have develop a really close friendship and friend base with guys that, kind of in that junior high era where we started to take basketball seriously, started to work on it more in our free time, put a lot of time and effort into just developing our game and playing as much as we can. So I'd probably say around that junior high, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, really started to trend towards basketball, and something that I was kind of became healthily obsessed with, I'll say.
Well, I'll also say that I'm impressed that you tried hockey for a year. I coached youth and high school hockey in the city of Minneapolis for 15 years.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Who knows? Our paths may have crossed earlier.
There was only two issues with me. It ran into basketball season.
Right.
So I had to figure that out. And then it was obviously really cold outside.
Yes.
And I don't mind the winter, but you're in junior high, it's freezing. And then I could skate fast, I just couldn't stop. So I was that dude that was flying down and then would just slam into the boards. But it was fun. Like I said, I did it for a year and did the whole park board outside where, 9 a.m., 10 a.m. in the morning, and you're out there skating. So I enjoyed it, but then I realized quickly that I'm more of an indoor guy.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. So you starting to find your niche, and then you picked De La Salle High School. Was there a reason why De La Salle High?
Yeah, so growing up, I would always attend the Clem Haskins basketball camp.
And
if you were good enough, you kind of get invited to
–
it was like the high potential part of it. And so we go to this high potential – And every year I'd run into this guy named Dave Thorson, who at the time was an assistant at Minnesota for Clem.
Mm-hmm.
And, Dave kind of took a liking to me. I was fortunate enough to have some talent. So I think they were kind of, at a young age, you kind of have a pulse of who could play in the state and who has a chance to maybe develop into something. And so, I'd see him annually and we had a relationship. And then one day, I remember waking up in like eighth grade, and this was back when, everybody still read the paper, and I read Sid's column.
Yes.
And I would read it every day. And in Sid's column, he had a little blurb, and it was, they always had like the highlighted name. Well, I caught the highlighted name. I was like, man, Dave Thorson, I know that name. So I started reading kind of the little blurb he had, and he said, former University of Minnesota coach or assistant coach Dave Thorson has resigned and is taking over the De La Salle high school job.
Okay.
So I remember I knew of De La Salle because they've always had good basketball tradition, and they had a couple guys at that time from the city on the team. And I remember going to my mom and telling her, like, I know this guy. And I got excited because I knew that he knew how to get me to where I wanted to be. And at that point, it was to get a Division I scholarship and to play basketball in college. And so the next thing I know I needed to do was try to set up a meeting with Coach to see, if I'd have an opportunity as a freshman to play for him on the varsity team. And so that's kind of what we did. And so I went down there, and I didn't ask for, like, any promises. I just said, Coach, the only thing I ask is that you're open to let me try out for the varsity team. And he said, I can't guarantee you you'll make it, but I can guarantee you that I'll let you try.
Right.
And the rest is kind of history, man.
Yeah. A couple of anecdotes. One, Clem Haskins was the head coach when I was at – Clem Haskins and Jim Dutcher were the head coaches when I was at school there. And even though I worked football, I did laundry for basketball, so I got to know both. And one day I was messing around out on the court, and Clem pulled me to the side, and he said, come here and bring that ball with you. And, when Clem said something, you went. And I went over there, and he said, come here, let me show you how to do a hook.
Really?
And then he showed me the footwork and how to launch it and everything. And within 5 minutes, I learned how to shoot a hook shot. And I've still never forgotten how to do a hook shot.
There you go. Always teaching, man.
Right.
Always teaching.
And then the other anecdote is Sid Hartman, who, ladies and gentlemen, we lost Sid last year at the age of, I believe, 101. Mm-hmm. And when we lost him, Sid was still working for the local big newspaper in town, the Star Tribune and the Sports. He basically worked 70 or close to 80 years for the paper. And Sid knew you or heard of you, you were in.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to show up in his column, Ben, that meant that you were in. So,
that's great. So, and that's a great point because Sid was, legendary. Obviously, the history he's got with the Lakers and having them originate here and just being an icon in the sports. But, that column was a big deal. But when we would all read it, we literally would open the paper, and that's where you got kind of like what is now on Twitter. You got the scoop of what's going on with anything Minnesota related. And so it was a big deal. Like if you got in Sid's column, you knew everybody saw it. Everybody read it. It was like big news. And so I just remember that was a daily thing whenever it would come out during the week is like, man, check out Sid's column and see what's going on, and keep track of the ins and outs and who was killing it and who wasn't. And then when I came as assistant coach at Minnesota, he was in his 90s, mid to late 90s.
Yes.
He would still come in once a week and sit down in my office.
Mm-hmm.
And to be that age, still had a pretty solid understanding and memory of things that was going on, and it was incredible.
He could never remember my name, but he always called me, hey, how you doing, black kid from St. Louis. Now, he remembered I was from St. Louis because where he met me was in the football offices when I first started as a student manager. And I was also lucky enough to go in the defensive staff meetings and get some education on coaching by listening to the defensive staff game plan for the week. And yes. One of the assistants at the time, part-time assistant, was Tony Dungy. So,
oh wow,
yeah, I've bumped into a few people. Now I've bumped into Tony again, and he has no recollection of me, which breaks my heart. But you know that happens. You know,
yeah,
that was in 1980, so he can't remember everything. But so now you're playing at De La Salle, and colleges are starting to knock on your door. What made you decide the University of Minnesota?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. So, you know, and in college, I always obviously grew up, you know, watching Big Ten and loving Big Ten. And so, you know, during the process when I was being recruited, you know, I always thought at the end of the day I'd end up in the Big Ten. And Minnesota did a good job recruiting me, especially early.
Mm-hmm.
Had a good relationship. But, you know, I took a little twist. So I originally started off at Northwestern for Kevin O'Neill.
Okay.
In the Big Ten for my first 2 years. And then
I did not know that.
Yeah, ended up transferring back when he left to go to the Knicks. And so I took a little bit of a twist. But, you know, like I said, coming out of high school, you know, obviously Minnesota basketball was a big deal. And Clem recruited me, you know, and I went through the process. But, you know, thankfully, like as I said, it worked out. You know, Coach O'Neill ended up going to the Knicks with Van Gundy. And, again, it was just one of those deals where I looked at where I was at and what I wanted to get out of it, and knew that Minnesota was always kind of in the back of my mind and probably should have went there from the start, but it, you know, it ended up working out.
So you land here, you play
for Munson.
Yeah, yep. Coach Munson. I was struggling to remember his name. I'm sorry. And you're liking what's going on. So did, when you were finished, did you attempt to go to the pros, or did you just move on to coaching right away?
Yep. So, you know, I had a couple NBA workouts, and I knew, obviously, you know, yeah, if I could make a summer league team, that would be great. You know, I knew I'd probably have to really, really grind and get lucky and catch a break, you know, to make it to the NBA. And then I was presented with an opportunity early, probably earlier than I anticipated, from a coach, Brian Gregory, who actually had recruited me out of high school that I had a great relationship with, that I trusted, that was now the head coach at Dayton, which is a big time job.
Mm-hmm.
And so he called me up randomly and asked if I had any interest in getting into coaching. And, you know, as you know, it's so hard to get into
yes.
coaching.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible. And so I had to make a decision sooner than I probably wanted to. Because I knew I could have gone and played and done that for a long time and been really happy, but I never knew when a window would have presented itself to coach. And I knew I always eventually wanted to get into it. And so he kind of persuaded me and told me all the positives about getting into it at a young age, obviously getting into it with a guy that I respected at a big time job at Dayton. I knew I could have played till I was 40. I was always going to miss basketball playing.
Right.
So like that kind of helped me with my decision, to be honest. And I jumped into it. I went down there and drove down to Dayton. I was got to be 23, 24, and was 2 feet in and have been hooked coaching ever since.
Yeah, that's a major thing for somebody at that age. But I've seen many people be successful in their 20s and watch them grow. You know, like John Anderson became the head coach at University of Minnesota baseball at 26.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Allister, who was the softball coach who turned the softball program around, ironically, same age, 26. So it's not about age, people. It's about knowledge and people who want to get after it. So at Dayton, what was the how was the experience and what was the next move?
So Dayton was great. You know, I was able to basically learn and start from the bottom up. You know, as a GA, you do everything that's not glamorous,
right.
But is also obviously important to the job. And so, you know, I love the fact that I started from the bottom. And, you know, I learned how to appreciate every phase, every person, every step that it takes to run a successful program. You know, I was able to learn from a staff that was big time. You know, two of those guys are in the NBA. Actually, three of those guys are in the NBA right now.
Who are that?
In a coaching capacity. So, oh, okay. Reggie Rankin, mm-hmm. Who was an assistant there, is now with Golden State. Billy Schmidt, who was an assistant there, is with Billy Donovan in Chicago. And then Bob Beyer, who was the other assistant there, is with Stan Van Gundy in New Orleans. And now BG's with this is the head coach at South Florida. So I got a chance to learn from a veteran staff that's unbelievable. And I was lucky. I was lucky after my first year there to get a full-time gig. And that's when I really broke into the profession and was fortunate to work for a guy named Chom Shubert at a low major Division I in South Texas. And at the time was called University of Texas Pan American. And I think right now it's changed to UTRGV. But was able to work with him and get on full-time right after my first year of being a GA.
Well, my oldest brother's going to love this conversation. He's a basketball junkie, and he actually owns his own basketball academy and gym in St. Louis. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, he's primarily working with young females, but they do work with young men from time to time also. So you now you're down in Texas. You're as I would say, you're climbing the ladder to and becoming more successful, and also taking on more responsibility. So, where did that take you next?
Yeah, so I did 2 years down there, which I love. Probably one of the funnest times I've ever had in coaching. And then was fortunate enough to come back up to the Midwest and get on with Ben Jacobson at Northern Iowa. And, you know, Coach Jake was a guy I've kind of known in a roundabout way just through high school. You know, he used to coach at North Dakota and recruited kind of this area. So I knew him, had a tremendous amount of respect for him. Obviously, Northern Iowa was a very strong program. So I was able to come back up here, work for him, and really have four amazing years at Northern Iowa. I mean, we won the league, you know, multiple times, won the league tournament multiple times. Went to the NCAA tournament multiple times, was fortunate enough to be on the team that upset the number one Kansas, and we made our Sweet 16 appearance.
Yeah.
And had one of our players on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Wow.
Was able to really, you know, hone kind of my philosophy with basketball.
Yes.
And really kind of speed up how I thought the game through Jake and through his knowledge and his offensive IQ. So learned a ton that way of just how to think intelligently and how to kind of form my thoughts offensively. And like I said, was able to win a lot. And that kind of propelled me to my next spot at Nebraska, where I got a chance to work with Tim Miles.
Okay.
And that was the first big break I got.
Right.
That was going from the Missouri Valley, which was a good level in a good league, but still kind of quote unquote mid-major, to get my first break into the high level stuff within the Big Ten. And that was Nebraska's first year going to the Big Ten and getting a chance to work for Tim Miles, another guy that I've known forever, was awesome. And to be back in the Big Ten as a coach now at that time was like surreal to me.
It had to be. And the experience was wonderful at Nebraska, yeah, I take it.
It was great. I mean, you know, just the history and tradition of just Nebraska athletics. I think I didn't realize how strong they are in, you know, everything, baseball, volleyball, wrestling, you know, football, without a doubt.
Right.
And being able to experience football and being around Tom Osborne and just the legacy that Nebraska athletics is was special. The amount of passion they have for all their sport teams and that university was special. And was able to be there and again hone my skills at the highest level, and that propelled me to my next stop, which was at Minnesota and getting on with Richard Pitino.
Right.
And the wild thing about that is I did not know Richard at all.
Yes.
We had never like crossed paths. We had never met. You know. Obviously, I knew of him, but was fortunate enough to be able to have a couple sit downs with him and kind of persuade and get my way on staff with him. and had an unbelievable 5 years, you know, getting back to my alma mater and being able to contribute and won the NIT and made an NCAA tournament and was able to get some local kids here that had some success, not only here, but, you know, fortunately on the pro level and kind of leave my mark, which I think anybody that comes back home, you just want to be able to try to have an impact and hopefully leave it better than when you got there, when you leave.
Yeah, that's understandable. I got to travel with some of my teams, and Nebraska was one of my favorite places to go. It was just a nice little college town that had a larger city feel to it. Yep. And to meet Tom Osborne, that must have been a wonderful thing, because I've spoken to other people who say that the man is just a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, he's amazing. And for me, you know, I've always been a football guy, you know, and to meet a guy that is a true football icon was awesome. And he was pretty hands on. I mean, he was the AD,
right?
My 1 year at Nebraska. So we actually dealt with him and got a chance to really develop a relationship with him. And that was to me the coolest thing. I mean, he's still, you know, he's got that presence. He's seen a lot and been around a lot of winning and a lot of talent. But definitely he's got that aura. I mean, when he walks in that room, he's got that presence to him. And to be able to be there and have that relationship and connect with him and talk with him and talk football and history was definitely awesome.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was the lead student manager for football at the University of Minnesota the year they beat us 84-13. Uh-huh. And then I traveled. I wasn't a student manager. I was a student worker in the department, and I traveled to Lincoln the following year. And we kind of held, the following year we had Lou Holtz, and we kind of held our own. I don't remember the score, but it wasn't that bad. But
they were a monster. Yeah. So they were on a different level.
Well, the year they beat us 84-13, they had guys winning all type of trophies and whatnot, first round draft choice, and unfortunately we were the home team, which meant they only traveled with 70, so they couldn't go deeper and deeper to their bench. It just gets out of control after a while. Well, this is normally why I take a break, but I'm not going to, because I'm not going to take up your time for a commercial. Okay. I'll run it when we're done. So you land back at the University of Minnesota. People are happy to see you. I know I was one of them. Get to see you in the hallways, have a quick conversation, because most of the time when you were in the hallway, there was a cell phone tied to your ear to some young recruit. Now, this is going to be a question. I'm going to jump forward a little bit to now, but tie in to that point. How has recruiting changed from the times I would see you in the hallways to where you're trying to convince young men now to come to the University of Minnesota?
It's just, man, it is crazy. It evolves and changes almost every year, whether that's because of rules or just the times. But it's so competitive, and it's obviously so important for each program that – you know, it's all the time. It's truly 24/7. And the key is you just got to work it, you know, you got to work it. And I think social media, whether it's different apps or just different availability or contacts through social media that you can get with a kid, different platforms that kids use or you use to sell your program or your brand of a school, you got to just be on top of all that stuff. And so I think, you know, when Twitter really came into play with just the amount of information that Twitter has and the platform that it is, it really did flip, you know, all of recruiting. And like I said, now with the portal that's come into play, You know, it's almost like free agency,
yeah,
in a way. And I don't think it's going anywhere. So, you know, it's going to be around. It's our job now. We just got to navigate it as best you can and figure it out and adapt.
Well, let me take a step back now to when you were an assistant under Richard. How was that experience?
You know, it was good. You know, I'd always kind of been brought up in more of a quote unquote traditional style of basketball. And the one thing I took, one of the things I took away from Richard was just the different approach and philosophy that he had. And it really helped me expand my mind and expand kind of my philosophy and my outlook on the game, which I loved. I mean, I always trying to grow. But, you know, the up-tempo style, whether that's a press, or actually multiple presses, mentality offensively on how to play the game, you know, what he ran, how he thought as an offensive coach, you know, defensively in the half court, you've got your different zones and your rules and principles to zone defense. So it really expanded kind of my knowledge of the game and, you know, definitely taking bits and pieces from both offense, defense, and into me now as being a head coach. I think a lot of that stuff is valuable and it's an exciting brand of basketball. So being able to learn just a new style for me was pretty cool.
Yeah, so you're back in your hometown. You get to eat J.D. Hoyts every once in a while.
Yeah.
And are you a married man, sir? If I'm not being
married yet.
Okay.
Nope.
All right. So if there's any young ladies listening to this in the Twin Cities area, no, I'm just
there
kidding.
You go.
Just
you
kidding.
Got my plug.
But so then you after, you know, how many years were you on the bench with Richard?
I was there 5 years.
Okay. And then you left. And yep. And I'm going to be honest with you. When you left, I was a little sad, but then I looked at some coworkers and throughout the building, and I said, he'll be back as a head coach here.
You saw it before I saw it, man. You had belief before I had belief. I appreciate that.
I just, you know, I get these premonitions every once in a while, and people think I'm loco, and they happen, and I just look at them and just keep walking. I mean, yeah. It's just... I won't say that I'm psychic or any of that crap. I just, for me, they're just breadcrumbs that are just left from people, and you just I just follow them and to the next logical conclusion, and you know, I make wild predictions with people think, oh, you're crazy, and then they come true, and I was like, okay. So when you left after 5 years with Richard, where did you go?
So I left and I went to Xavier University in Cincinnati, and you know, like obviously to leave it was bittersweet. It would have definitely had to have taken something at Xavier's caliber at the time to get me to leave. You know, Xavier had just won the Big East. And that was the year that Villanova ended up winning the whole thing,
right?
The whole NCAA tournament. So they had just come off a Big East championship. They're one of the four number one overall seeds in the entire NCAA tournament. Obviously, their basketball tradition and history kind of speaks for itself. Unbelievable fan base. Like I said, perennial top 25 program. And so for me, at that time, was kind of it was too good of an opportunity not to take advantage of. And so. Got the chance to go to Xavier for 3 years and work under Travis Steele, who's another one of the young, great up and coming coaches in our game. Learn from a new league, which was really fun for me to learn about just the different style of basketball in the Big East. I think, you know, the Big East is one of those NCAA staples when you talk about, you know, Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova, Seton Hall. You know, I could go on and on about traditional, you know, basketball powers. So there's no like real football in the Big East. So everything is about basketball.
Yes.
And, you know, the tradition is so rich and just the style of play is different. And that's what I loved. It was fun to, you know, see how the game is played, see how it's officiated, see how it's recruited and coached. And I definitely took a lot out of those 3 years as far as just philosophy, from recruiting, from play calling, from style of play, that I think will be very beneficial for me here in Minnesota.
So how many years were you at Xavier?
Just finished my third year. Okay. This fall, or this spring.
So, unfortunately, we had a coaching change here at the University of Minnesota, and when that happened, I started wandering around. You know, I had by this, you know, I don't know if you know, I think I told you I have left the athletics, but I'm still on campus.
Yep.
And, you know,
yep,
people I work with, we still talk about mostly basketball and some football and a little bit of hockey. But when that firing happened, I started mentioning your name again, and everybody just kind of looked at me like I was nuts again. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it happened, and I just, they said, how would you even think of that? It's like, eh, I don't know. I just had a feeling. So how was that day, that whole scenario of being contacted and hired and introduced for you to come back and coach at your alma mater?
It was, it was, and it still is surreal. You know, I don't think it's hit me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll fully hit me for you know, maybe till the season or maybe the end of this first year. But like, it's still surreal, man. You know, I know obviously I'm very blessed and fortunate, and a lot of things worked out in my favor to be, even be in this position. But it was, you know, for lack of a better word, it was awesome. You know, to get that call from Mark Coyle, you know, to have the trust from not only him, but, you know, the president and the rest of the committee and the athletic department, you know, that it's hard to put into words kind of what that means, but it's special. And, you know, to think kind of I really came full circle when you talk about a kid that grew up watching it, was recruited, played, became an assistant, and now a head coach. I mean, that story doesn't really happen all that often. So I definitely know that I'm very blessed. And, you know, the timing of it was quick, but I tried to soak it all in because, you know, it is a cool time. And every day, you know, that I walk in Athletes Village and in my office, I'm reminded, you know, just how lucky and fortunate I am. I definitely don't take the position lightly. And every day I work, you know, hard with the mindset of trying to move this program forward with everything I have. And, you know, hopefully in time we'll be able to do that. But the whole process was unbelievable. You know, for me, obviously couldn't have gone better. And it's just something that I was soaking up every day. And like I said, it's hit me, but it probably won't really hit me till a little bit farther down the line.
Well, you're not the first African-American coach at the University of Minnesota. Clem was, but you're the first one from Minnesota from the Twin Cities. Do you feel any added responsibilities or anything about that?
No, not really. I think the responsibility I feel would feel this, you know, anywhere I was at, you know, with saying that, obviously this place means more to me than probably, you know, any other school I could be at. So there's pressure, but it's not from the outside. It's more from me and my expectations of myself and the vision that I want to have for what I can do for this program and this university. But no, I don't feel pressure from the outside. I think, you know, it's probably going back to my playing days. You know, when you're in this seat, you just kind of put your blinders on and you focus and you just work. And I think I understand the realness of the position. I get that. I get the level that I'm at and the expectation. But I think, you know, I don't try to spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about that. I just spend a lot of time on putting my energy towards the work that's needed to get it going and bringing the juice every day to do that.
Speaking of expectations, what will your expectations be for the program? We're going to get into heavy questions now.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. You know, to start, we just want to lay that foundation. And, you know, obviously you want to win. You want to win every game you can. So I think that goes without saying. Mm-hmm. My biggest expectation is to sustain a level of success. and that level of success be a high level of success. I think that's the hardest thing to do in sports. I think we've shown glimpses here at the University of being able to win.
Yes.
I think what we haven't done is be able to sustain it at a level that we all want it to be at. And so that's the biggest challenge. And that's what I think about every single day when I wake up and I head into work is, okay, we gotta get better today, and we gotta get in that position where we're all flowing to that, you know, high level of success. And I think that means, you know, I wanna win a Big Ten championship. I wanna put ourselves in a position where we could talk about that regularly. That like, that's an option. Right. I wanna make it to the NCAA tournament where that's kinda like the standard. And you know, now it's more about, all right, how far can we go in it? Mm-hmm. You know, can we get to another Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, and to kind of sustain that level of success. So, you know, that's what drives me. That's what we work towards. And that, I guess, is kind of the expectation is to blow it up and to have that tradition kind of like you see at a Purdue, a Michigan mm-hmm. State, a Michigan.
Right.
And to be relevant in that level.
Well, those are big shoes. And but as an alum, I would love to see it. Now, the other thing that people may not know who listen from out of state, you know, out of Minnesota. Minnesota has become a hotbed of college basketball recruiting, of all things. This is supposedly the state of hockey, but I would say lately we've had more are equal to big time basketball recruits as we have hockey recruits. How are you going to stop the leakage or start keeping those young men here in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, no, it's not easy because it, you know, it is so competitive. You know, we have great high school coaches, we have great AAU coaches, we have great skill development guys. I think the brand of basketball here and the amount of talent that we do have that translates to success has put Minnesota on the map as far as recruiting. And, you know, it's our job now to paint a picture and create a story so that all these kids don't feel like they need to go out of state to get everything that they want. And that's, you know, a great education, that's playing in front of an unbelievable fan base, that's having the opportunity to win a conference championship, have an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament, having the opportunity to play in a Final Four and hopefully compete for a national title, and then above and beyond, being able to play after college. And for a lot of these guys, it's in the NBA. And then the next step is, can you get drafted? And then the next step is, can you be a lottery pick? So I think over time, we've got to start building our program to all of those levels so that these kids feel like, you know what, I can go to Minnesota and stay home. I don't need to go to a Kentucky, a North Carolina, a Duke, a Kansas to achieve all my goals and dreams.
Well, we just had a one and done play in the finals, Mr. Suggs, and we just had one sign at that school who will probably be a one and done. What is your philosophy on one and dones, and are you pro or are you against, or you think you should have a mix? What are your thoughts?
I love them, especially now with this portal where your roster is going to be flipped almost annually. I love them. I think if you get a chance to get that level of talent, now you got the talent's got to match or mesh with, you know, who you are as a coach and your core values and your culture and, you know, your program and the league and all that. But, you know, if you can get that level of player and that level of talent, I think you gotta try to get it. You gotta embrace it. I would love, you know, I'd love to have Cal's problem where you've got, you know, a bench full of guys that are going to go play in the NBA and as first round draft picks. You know, so, you know, hopefully we get to that point where we're able to really, really, really annually recruit those type of talented kids that fit what we want to do. But I'm all for it. I mean, I think when you can try to coach the best players that fit you and the best players from around the country, I mean, that's what we all strive for.
But also, you're going to have some player development, I would take it, as far as like maybe having somebody who may be here for 3 or 4 years. And you know, to me, those are the players that really build, you know, the walls or the floor of your program.
Yeah. No, no question. I mean, when you have a player here for only, you know, 8 or 9 months, if they're a 1 year guy, you know, you obviously can develop them, and we have a really good player development plan and program. But you're right. I mean, the base of your growth and kind of the ground level of your program are going to be those guys that are multi-year guys. And, you know, especially if you can get those 4 year seniors, you know, those guys can really do damage because they've got experience. They've got age. They've gone through the development. So, you know, they're going to be solid. They understand the league and winning. And they're men, you know. And so, yeah, ideally, you kind of have a mixture of both. You know, can you get young talent that's talented and youthful and has that kind of juice? But then can you also combine that with experience, because there's no substitute for age and experience.
Well, as you build your program and you're recruiting and, you know, you're graduating players and all those good things, and you stated this earlier, things seem to in college sports seems to change. You know, I don't even want to say yearly anymore. The way I see things changing. How are you going to be able, and I know you're not going to be able to give me a full answer to this, but give thoughts on roster management and the transfer portal, and also there's some trends that are happening with the older guard starting to walk away from college basketball, the older coaches, and what changes you see with that.
Yeah, no, that's going to be really interesting. You saw it this year already with Roy Williams. You know, there is going to kind of be a changing of the guard here in the next 2 to 5 years, I would say. And then it's going to change college basketball, because a lot of those guys are legendary, as you know, and they've been around it forever. When you're talking about the Jim Boeheims and the Mike Krzyzewskis and the Tom Izzos, those guys are staples. So you're going to see a little bit of a change with that whenever those guys decide to step down. But I think, you know, with recruiting, I think the days of having 13 guys on scholarship are probably gone.
Okay.
I think you just can't keep that amount of guys happy.
Right.
Especially if you're recruiting at the level and you're recruiting good enough players. It's just, you know, like I said, the portal has changed everything. And these guys want to play right away, which I totally get. And a lot of them probably deserve. And I just think it's almost too hard to keep all those bodies content and happy on the bench. So I think you'll probably see smaller rosters. You'll see, you know, guys that I don't know how the redshirting is going to go. If guys are going to be patient to redshirt, or if they're just rather go to a different place where they know they're going to get that immediate playing time. So it'll be fun. I'm anxious to see how it plays out. You know, I think it can work a lot of ways, but I think it's new for everybody, so we're all kind of treading lightly and just taking it day by day. And I think it's also going to force your coaches and staffs to have a great relationship with your players and to have open communication, so that you don't have a mass exodus at the end of the year, and so that, you know, if guy isn't playing, he understands and there's buy-in, or you know, you're able to get on common ground, so you know who's going to be coming back, so you can kind of plan accordingly as far as recruiting goes. But I think the communication piece amongst everybody in your program, players and coaches and families, is probably going to have to be at the highest level it's been, because there's going to be opportunity for a lot of movement.
Well, I'm in the generation behind these legendary coaches, and I know I started feeling some angst about social media leaking in and Instagram and Twitter and whatnot. And I can just imagine those old guys just throwing their hands up in their office having to deal with all that. And now you're going to have to not only have the transfer portal, you're going to have name, image, and likeness to deal with. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, selfishly, I mean, it's like I said, it's going to happen. So it's like you got to wrap your brain. We can fight it, and you could be mad about it, but it's going to happen. The one benefit that I see from it is, you know, where we're located.
Yes.
And we got to do our job. If we can't figure out on our end how to make this work in our favor, I think that's on us, because I think there's a lot of opportunity here right now to take advantage of this new rule, and we could kill it. And, you know, the benefit, if you just look in our league, is no one has the Fortune 500 companies or the money or the resources like we do. You know, it's
correct.
Not in Champaign. It's not in East Lansing. It's not in Ann Arbor. So we just got to do our job, get creative, and get on the same page, and, you know, within the rules, think outside the box of how we can take advantage of this new rule to help our programs, and not just basketball, but you want to help everybody, because we got so much to sell here, and we talk about it in recruiting, and so now it's on us to kind of put pen to paper and get to work and have a great game plan.
Yeah, I mean, we have Target, we have 3M, we have and on and on and on here. We have pro sports, but you can get a college athlete much, much, much cheaper if you're one of those entities than
no
you
question.
Can a pro athlete or a pro team.
Yep, no question. No question.
In the last couple of minutes here, Ben, and I again want to thank you for being so gracious with your time today. Again, I'm talking with head coach Ben Johnson of the University of Minnesota. God, that makes me feel so good to say that. University of Minnesota basketball program. Hey, I always love it when an alumni steps in his positions. And if you look at the University of Minnesota, it happens a lot. Softball, yep. Baseball, wrestling, women's gymnastics, and yep. You just – keep going on and on. It just seems to keep happening that we bring back one of our own, which is great. Just great to feel and great to see. Go ahead.
No, it's awesome. And I was gonna say, I love it. I mean, I think a lot of credit goes to our administration, you know, and Mark Coyle, because, you know, whether it's Lindsey Whalen or myself,
well, I forgot about Lindsey. I'm sorry.
Yeah, for this level of position, you know, I'm smart enough to know that there's a lot of people that could be in my shoes. And, you know, for Mark to look at me and Lindsey just as the kind of the two latest, I think says a lot about him and the value that he places on just that, that alumni do matter. And if you handle yourself the right way and you do a good job, that, you know, the university is gonna look out for you. And I think it's awesome. You know, and I think your point is dead on. It's not just me and her, but it's across the board, whether it's, like you said, gymnastics, wrestling, softball.
Yep. Baseball.
You know, be able to – baseball, yeah. I mean, baseball, honestly, he's legendary here. You know, to have that, I think is really, really cool. And, you know, I hope it's something we continue to keep doing. You know, I'd love to hire and find former guys that can help me out, but I think it's awesome, and hats off to everybody for making it happen, because it is unique, it's special, and I think it's all in a positive, good way.
Yeah, I would attend when Quincy Lewis, the director of the M Club, would have meetings, and he would invite staff who were, you know, M people, and I would just sit in a room and just kind of go, oh, there's a head baseball coach, there's a head softball, you know, and it was just kind of like, oh man, this is, but it was great because those people had the same shared experience, and I had the same shared experience, you know, walking those same hallways, those same streets, the Bierman Building and Williams Arena and all those things. So you got to coach in the spring football game. How was that?
I did. You know what? It was really cool. And I appreciate Coach Fleck for letting me do it. Because like I said, I'm a football guy. And so to be able to see it from a different lens and a different angle was really cool. To be able to, you know, spend the day and get into the coordinator's room before the game and kind of hear their speech and their spiel and their game plan, to be able to wear the headset and hear how those different sides of the ball talk and communicate throughout the game, just to be on the sidelines and to feel all that energy with the players, you know, was awesome. And, you know, I think they got some special guys coming up that I think are going to do great. And I look forward to watching Gopher football this fall and finally be able to have fans at the games will be cool. But, no, the whole day was awesome. And there was a lot of energy and a lot of love. And hopefully something we can do again maybe down the line.
Well, and for myself to, I got to sit behind Clint Haskins when he coached and be on the sideline of Gopher football for 22 years and, you know, and be in dugouts and on sidelines and whatnot and have a close relationship with coaches and learning all those different things. I always tell people when I watch a sporting event, I see a totally different game than they do. Because of my experience, I noticed things that most people would go, I didn't see that. And it was like, never forget when the, I can't think of his name. He's the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings right now. And he was playing at Michigan State and we were playing against him. And I was at Joe Sensor's in Roseville and one of our players hit him and his helmet exploded. And I heard it and saw it. And I said calmly, I was with Bob Rohde and a few other people, and I calmly said, his helmet just exploded. And they all looked at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, don't you guys see that big hole in his helmet? And it was like, whatever. And then, like, 3 seconds later, he ran to the sideline with his helmet in his hand and threw it at somebody and wanting a new helmet because they were going to go for two. And the concussion hadn't set in yet.
I got you.
Got a helmet. They ran the two-point conversion, and we never saw him for the rest of the game. So I see. Yeah. So I, you know, just from my experience on the sidelines and being close, you do get to see things a little bit different. Here in our last seconds, Ben, can you kind of give the listeners what your style of play is and what your thoughts is of your program?
Yeah. No, I say this jokingly, but, you know, I want to play a winning style. And I think that means a lot of things. You know, obviously, you know, the details of it kind of depends on our roster and the players and what we can do. And obviously, you always want to play to their strengths, but I want to play a winning style that's competitive, that's aggressive, that's gritty, that's, you know, kind of – that's just blue-collar Big Ten Minnesota basketball. Mm-hmm. That you have players that are skilled at all five spots that can all dribble, pass, and shoot, make high-level plays, understand the game, but are supremely competitive. I think that's going to be the biggest thing is having guys that, you know, I don't know how many games we're going to win – but we're going to be a tough out. And every loose ball matters. Every pass matters. Every possession matters mentality. If we're going to go down, we're going to go down swinging. We're going to do it the right way. You know, we're going to move the ball, play unselfishly, get that ball humming in the half court. But putting a premium on guys with a high skill, high feel, high IQ that can really shoot the basketball.
That sounds wonderful, Ben. That reminds me of the Clem Haskins days for sure. I'm just going to say how proud I am. So happy that you're in that position. Please, please, please lock down the borders of Minnesota and start reaching out other places. But also, as an alumnus, make sure those young men are getting an education and that they, you know, stay straight and narrow. We have a lot to offer here in the Twin Cities, but sometimes we have some of the wrong stuff to offer too.
Yep. Well, no, I like to say I appreciate you having me on. Appreciate your words and definitely, you know, it's hopefully it's my goal to make everybody proud of the product that we have that's going to be out on on Williams Arena floor and proud of what they do in the community, in the classroom, and who and how they become men. And that's our job to pull that out of them and to have success all the way around. So, again, I appreciate jumping on with you and having this conversation, man, and talking Gopher basketball.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And my best wishes to you, man. Stay strong. If there's anything I can do for you, don't hesitate to reach out. You know, I'm here as an M man and an alumnus. So
I will do. Will do. Same here, man. I appreciate it. Thanks again.
All right. Take care, Ben.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's been Gopher head coach, basketball coach Ben Johnson here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Well, folks, the season is finally here. What season? Baseball and softball season, of course. Are you ready? What about you players out there? Are you ready? Is your equipment ready? What about that glove you've been using? What about that uniform you've been wearing year after year? Well, I tell you what, if it needs to be repaired, bring it to JB's Glove Repair. He'll have you together in no time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair. With over 30 plus years of experience, he'll have you ready by game time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair.
J
B
is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
I am Negro, Black, African American,
Black.
Django, J
B.
Damn, Dolomite.
Great God in heaven, you know I.
J
B, our great Negro sex machine.